Thanks, Andy, and thanks for giving me a chance to fit this into the program. So a Higgs, particularly a light Higgs, is an exquisitely sensitive window to beyond the standard model physics for many reasons. One of the reasons, which we've been hearing a lot about one way or another in this workshop, is that both its production vertex and one of its very useful decay vertices at the LHC are loop-induced, which means that there's a lot of opportunity to probe indirectly hints of new physics in one of these two vertices. I'm going to talk about something that's more orthogonal to this, which is that the Higgs is one of the two lowest dimensional singlet operators that you can construct out of standard model fields. So H squared is dimension 2. The other dimension 2 operator you can construct that's a total singlet is the hypercharged field strength. And so if you have some new sector that is communicating with the standard model, you expect the leading interactions to happen to the Higgs first. In other words, the Higgs sector is one of the first places you would expect to see hints of physics beyond the standard model.
Why do you start from a relevant operator? You can have H dagger H times a new scalar.
This D doesn't have to be bigger than 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Last but certainly not least, a light standard model Higgs, light meaning below the W threshold, is fantastically narrow. So sitting here at 125 GeV, the dominant decay is 2 BD bar. B quirky Kawa is so small that even off-shell decays or phase-space suppressed can compete with it, and so can loop-suppressed decays. So we happen to live in this window where the standard model width is really, really minuscule. And that means if there's so much to breathe on this thing, it can pick up a non-trivial branching fraction to states beyond the standard model, even if those states are fairly weakly coupled. So the simplest example, and one of the best motivated and best studied, is a case where you have some new singlet scalar that has a coupling of this form to the Higgs boson. This, for instance, is a distillation of what happens in the NMSSM, which you heard a lot about yesterday. And so just to get some quantitative intuition, if I imagine that this term is responsible for giving this guy all of its mass, then the dilution of the standard model, of the total Higgs standard model branching fraction can be extremely large when this thing is right up at threshold, because that means this coupling is fairly large compared to the standard model couplings. And as it gets lighter, standard model starts dominating again. Or if I fix this coupling and have it be independent of the mass, then you see that even for fairly small couplings, you can easily get an order 10% suppression in the total standard model width. More quantitative intuition, if I imagine, okay, what kinds of scales can I probe in a hidden sector? If I take a fermion coupling as a sample dimension 6 hidden sector operator, if I, the natural scale for this mass parameter here is the mass of the fermion, plugging that in, if I imagine a 10% branching fraction into beyond the standard model particles, then I can probe hidden sectors with cutoff scales nearly a TeV. Okay. So these are the kinds of scales that we're talking about. So looking for beyond the standard model Higgs decays is, of course, a topic of long-standing interest. Historically, some of the best motivations for this has been trying to hide the Higgs at left, as Jack Gunyan, who's not here, has made a great hobby out of doing. And of course, many examples fall out very naturally from extended Higgs sectors, where it's very easy to have new BSM states that couple dominantly to the Higgs. Discovery of a largely standard model-like Higgs boson changes the kinds of questions we should be asking about exotic Higgs decays. For one thing, we do know exactly where to look, and so that can make searches easier, particularly searches where you can't reconstruct a mass peak. On the other hand, we already know that the branching ratio of Higgs to the standard model states cannot be too small, because we've seen it more or less how we expect to see it. So for a light Higgs boson, to excellent approximation, Again, because you can couple things very weakly to the standard model and still disrupt the branching fractions by a significant amount, you can alter the decays without hardly touching the couplings to gauge bosons and the top quark that determine the production at the LHC, which means that it's a very good approximation to consider standard model production and then BSM decays, even for relatively large BSM branching fractions. So as Michael Trott and other people have discussed, you can already start putting bounds then from straightforward reinterpretation of the standard model Higgs search data so indirectly assuming standard model production, the bounds on the branching fraction to Michael put invisible here, but this really means not picked up in standard model searches. This is generic BSM. This is his plot that I stole from his talk. If you just use CMS only, you're already at order 40%. All data already down at about 20%, at 95% confidence level. But as Michael Peskin emphasized yesterday, determining Higgs couplings at the LHC is really an order 10% program. And this is a slide from one of his papers on the Higgs coupling program at the LHC. So benchmark young standard model Higgs branching fractions of order 10% are not only allowed by current LHC data, but they are likely to be reasonable targets for the long-term LHC physics program. So in other words, if you want to study benchmark reference BSM decay models, if you can show that you can reach or exclude, say, 10%, that's a reasonable target to have in mind. So in order to talk about some of the challenges that come up for doing exotic Higgs decays at the Hadron Collider in particular, let me walk through a reference case, which is Higgs 2 invisibles, which is something I've studied with Yang Bai and Patrick Draper. The first question you have to ask when you have ABSM Higgs decay is, how are you going to see this? You have many different ways in which the Higgs is produced, but typically not all of them are useful. By far the most, the biggest cross-section is gluon fusion. But if you're looking at Higgs goes to invisibles, if you just make a Higgs at rest, it goes to invisibles, you don't see it. You have to demand at least one jet to get the recoil so you can see it. And so there's a price for the recoil, say order 10%, and that brings you down to the vector boson fusion down here. Vector boson fusion, final state is Higgs, which is missing energy, plus two jets. And one of the nice features about this channel is it has a transverse boost. Bear this in mind, this will be very useful when we start talking about exotic decays of the Higgs that goes to multiple objects that tend to be soft. Any channel that comes with an innate transverse boost gives you a leg up. Stepping down, we get to associated production. W going to a lepton guarantees that you will pass a trigger, which is really important. It turns out that this particular mode is not useful for Higgs invisibles just because the backgrounds are too big. You don't have enough kinematic information if your Higgs is purely invisible. But as a general rule, the combination of the relatively large rate and branching fraction means that W plus Higgs is very important as a baseline for exotic decays. And then finally, Z Higgs goes to leptons. Again, it's a guaranteed trigger, but it's quite rate limited. And okay. So the first question is, where are you getting your events? So it turns out for Higgs goes to invisibles, the most useful channel is weak boson fusion. It's the best trade-off between rate, because the production rate is large, and kinematic separation of your signal from your background. Invisibles are particularly challenging as exotic decay modes go, because you don't have very much kinematic information. So given the large standard model background that comes from Z goes to neutrinos, and the coincidence of the Z mass and the Higgs mass, you have relatively few tools for separating your invisible Higgs from your Z background. So weak boson fusion is the best trade-off between rate and kinematic information. And when Jan Patrick and I studied this, we realized that the only trigger for, we went through all the trigger menus that Atlas and CMS had made public, and the only trigger that we could count on getting a dunce on at a reasonable rate was the missing ET trigger. When we looked at what the threshold was where the efficiency is flat, which is not the same thing as the nominal threshold, but it's the threshold that's useful in analysis, this turned out to require a cut on missing ET of 120 GeV. And so we used that, and we found that we estimate that you can put an order 40% bound on branching fraction to invisibles in 8 GeV. But it turns out that this trigger threshold is too high to get the best significance. If we could drop the missing ET cut to order 90 GeV, we'd be able to improve this bound by, not a huge amount, say 5%, 10%, but a little bit, and that matters. Okay, so this is an illustration of a generic point. LHC triggers are not designed to see the soft multi-body decays, or in some cases, any decays, of a relatively light Higgs, especially if it's produced near rest. For very good reasons, they're designed to pick up events that are associated with the production of multi-hundreds of GeV scale particles. Again, there are very good reasons for this. If you have your thresholds too low, you swamp by background. And again, there are baselines to fall back on. Associated production with a W boson that goes to a lepton guarantees that you'll pick up order 1% of your Higgs produced. The problem is 1% is a small number, especially if you're looking at a 10% branching fraction to start with. So an example that I happen to know quite well is the case where Higgs goes to 4-glu. You can discover this if your branching fraction is 100%. If you give yourself 30 inverse femtobarn at 14 TeV by using associated production where you're guaranteed to trigger on leptons. If your rate is limited, then your reach is significantly limited. So it's a very good question to ask, what other possibilities for triggering can we have that are sensitive to Higgs in a more general context? One particular question is, what can you do with weak vector boson fusion, where you do have some relatively characteristic, relatively high PT jets, where there's an actual hope of trying to build in some trigger in some circumstances? Something that got Matt Sasser and a group of us, including myself, Tomer Volansky, Ruben Essig, and some people in his group at Stony Brook, are very excited. Are some of the possibilities afforded by data parking. For those of you who haven't heard of this, this is a program where both Atlas and CMS are able to store almost as much data as they are currently taking, or have taken in the past year, on tape to be processed later, so they haven't seen these events yet. So these are recorded on additional trigger streams, which let them open up to lower PT thresholds than some of their runtime triggers that they're actively looking at now. So in particular, CMS has two data parking triggers which are of special interest if you want to study exotic Higgs decay modes. And one of them is based on weak boson fusion jets. The nominal thresholds are a large invariant mass for the jets and a large rapidity saturation. I'm not fully conversant on the details of how the hardware and the triggers works, but because of how CMS has set up their level one triggers, they're able to use angular information at a very early stage in their triggers, which is what lets them cut on the relative properties of the jets. And that's critical for accepting weak boson fusion-like jets at a relatively high rate.
So, Jesse, yeah. These are just shuttered off at level one?
Yes.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the problem is that the ETA resolution is 0.35.
So this 0.35 is plus minus something like 0.35.
Well, it means that you have a soft turn on the curve, but with sufficient analysis, you can measure that.
Yeah.
Right, but usually, you know, if you don't cut in the plateau, it's not very easy to model it in any case. But yes, we measure the terminal curve.
Yeah. So.
And another trigger, which was put in for dark matter studies, is monojet plus missing. And this is actually very useful for studying Higgs decays that are semi-invisible. So here, the thresholds I was told are incredibly soft, and for the turn-on curves are fairly gradual. Again, I'm a theorist. I'm not an official member of the CMS collaboration. If you want up-to-date information, contact someone in the know. But these are the numbers that I am working with. Oh, sorry, PTJet. Thank you. That's a typo. Thank you. That's a PTJet.
So you really have the gamma?
It seems incredibly low. I don't know what to make of these numbers, to be honest. All I can say is
they've stored it. Who cares?
Yeah, you can't store that. Yeah. Partly because these numbers seem incredibly low to me, I put these caveats on.
For a monophoton trigger, it looks fine.
Photon, maybe.
For monojet, there is a veto on two jets over there. That's how you control it. No, I mean, well, it's monojet.
It's level one.
It's monojet, so one level, one jet.
At least one.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's a much worse.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that number is should not be trusted.
That's probably for the monophoton.
That is probably for the monophoton. Yeah. So just to illustrate how these triggers can be useful for Higgs decays, I considered. So this is work I did. At a somewhat preliminary level, this is a toy study designed to illustrate the potential utility of triggers. So don't take any of these numbers completely literally. Take them as an illustration. The model that I'm going to use is a mostly invisible Higgs decay. So Higgs goes to neutrino 2, neutrino 1, followed by this second neutrino going down to a photon to the first neutrino. So my total final state is invisible plus a soft photon. The kinematics are such that this photon is too soft to be picked up by photon triggers. So this is the photon PT distribution that I get from gluon fusion, and you see that 20 is right here. You probably can't read the axes, which I apologize. This is 20, so you can't even identify most of these photons if you just produce this guy at rest, okay? And this is the MET distribution, again at rest. So if I now put on some reference selection cuts,
I just ask one question, going back to transparency. What if you have radiation from the initial state?
We'll get there. That's really important for the. That's why the jet plus MET trigger is important.
About this kind of photon, or is it worse?
Photon radiation from the initial state is usually worse because jet radiation gives you more rate. Rate is really key here because you're looking at small branching fractions typically. Okay, so if I put on weak boson fusion reference selection cuts, this is now vector boson fusion Higgs production rather than gluon fusion. So I've added 100 GeV to the nominal trigger threshold, and I've added 0.5 to the eta cut here to try to get myself away from the slow turn on. Then you see that my photons, here's 20 again. So my photons, and this is 60. So you can see my photons are still not going to be giving me trigger passage. I'm really relying on the weak boson fusion. And the missing energy distribution, here's 125, which is, here's 120, which is the missing energy trigger orientation, right? So we're really relying on getting these events through this data parking trigger. And for comparison, here's gluon fusion plus one jet. So here are my reference jet plus net cuts. Maybe someone could comment on how feasible these are.
As Michael said, the Ternan curve will be very, very slow. So it will chop a lot of your distribution at the low end.
Uh-huh.
because in level one, for example, we measure that just with raw calorimetric energy. We put some correction, but it's totally different energy from what we measure offline when we use the tracker. So one has to see, but I guess the higher part of the plot should be fine.
So again, I apologize for the small size of these figure levels. This is 20 GeV for the photons. This is 80, which is sort of a typical monophoton peak. This is 100. Remember, this is requiring 80, so this zero here is 80. This is 120. This goes out to 300. So again, it's really important that we're using these lower thresholds to pick up these effects.
But then, if you haven't picked up them, then you can accept all of this secondary distribution. Is that right, or not?
You mean if I do get on the photon trigger?
Yeah. So you're triggering using that top line or not?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that's assuming that's an acceptable trigger, then you can potentially make use of the entirety of the bottom distribution.
Absolutely. That's the whole point. Yeah.
Did you have the invariant mass distribution of the two BBF jets?
Sorry, I don't have that made up, but I can show you that afterwards if you want. So this particular signal is fairly clean. It's just a single photon. There are sharp kinematic correlations with the missing energy. But there are many backgrounds, and to make it even worse, the backgrounds are all roughly the same order, so you can't ignore any one of them. Main physics background is Z goes to visible plus a real photon. Also very important, W plus photon, where you miss the lepton in a leptonic W decay. You have to handle leptons and tails separately. Then you have to worry about jets taking a photon for both of these, and you also have to worry about electronic decays of the W where the electron takes a photon. What I've done is just to use simple estimates for both photon efficiencies and for fake rates for jets and electrons, 10 to minus 3 is the order 10 to minus 2. Basically, because 10 to the minus 2 is order alpha, all of these fakes and electromagnetic processes come in at about the same order. Sorry, I screwed up the labels that badly here. I do apologize. This is a distribution of the non-BBF background processes in the BBF channel. So this is not BBF production, but you have two extra jets. About 15 femtobarns. This is real W gamma. This is W plus an electron faking a gamma. This is W plus a jet faking a gamma. Z real gamma, Z real jet.
So just to repeat, I think you said that these events do have the extra two jets already.
Yes. And that's why they are about the same order as the vector boson fusion processes. And so here, W gamma dominates, W electron, W jet, Z gamma, E, Z jet. Okay? So again, the kinematic features of the signal allow you some good handles to put some very simple cuts on to separate signal from background. And using these estimates, I find order 5 sigma with 5 inverse femtobarns in the gluon fusion. And the weak boson fusion is fewer events, so the statistics are not quite as good. I get 3.5 sigma, 5 inverse femtobarns, for a reference 10% branching fraction. So the point of this is just that 10% plus a relatively clean signal and the ability to get at these events means I can easily see this particular decay mode if I have these events. If I'm not able to pull in from this trigger stream these events, then my sensitivity is significantly more limited. And the other point I want to make is that this is just one example. And the real important features here is that the signal acceptance is not dependent on the details of the decay mode. It's monojet plus missing. I could replace a photon with any other sort of semi-invisible thing that I wanted to. I could put two soft leptons. I could, if I wanted to be a little more challenging, I could try putting in some taus. But the trigger, which means I get the events on tape in the first place, doesn't depend on exactly what's going on in the signal. So this is something where you can try to cast a broad net.
Sorry, I'm confused about the conclusion here. So you would have 5.5 sigma of significance if you could trigger in gluon fusion?
Plus one jet. Yeah. So one jet plus MET. So this relies on having a relatively large amount of MET. On the other hand, this vector boson fusion didn't rely on having any properties of the Higgs signal at all.
You're using the missing features.
Okay. So. Again, exotic Higgs decays may be our best hope for the unstandard model of the LHC, given that we haven't seen any TEV deviations that the collaborations are willing to admit to in public, at least. I think we would all like them, but we have to take seriously the possibility that the Higgs could be our only window onto BSM physics at the LHC. Branching fractions below 10% for exotic modes can, in many cases, be seen or excluded, but reach can be dramatically extended if there are these dedicated Higgsy triggers, and if they work. If they can't experimentally be made to work, then this program is a dead letter. So one important question for discussion is, how practical will these low-threshold monojet plus missing, monophoton plus missing, weak vector boson fusion jet, how tractable will these actually be in practice? And what other options for potentially soft, potentially high multiplicity Higgs decays can be exploited in a general sense? I think these are valuable questions that the community should think about, particularly because we have opportunity now during the shutdown, before the 13 TeV run picks up, to have the time to adjust trigger menus if necessary in the main run.
Sweet. Questions?
Yeah. I asked this question during the talk, and maybe the answer wasn't very clear to me. What is the precise definition of these one jet plus ET and one gamma plus ET triggers? Does anyone know?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the specific method because I have never used those, but I'm 90% sure that we don't do exclusive. We require at least one jet at level one.
Okay. But then this must be an enormous data stream. There must be something that restricts it.
It's at least one jet and some relatively large amount of net.
Yes, but it's not beta in second jet.
No, of
that's what
not.
I think. I think yeah. It doesn't beta the second jet.
But you wouldn't want that. I mean, as a theorist also, you wouldn't want that.
I have another, actually, question. So one big problem experimentally is that the soft photon can come from jets from pylon, because it's pretty soft. So there is a large background that might come from pylon. You apply a lot of missing ET, so maybe it's okay, but because you don't know which vertex the photon comes from, right? So if it's soft, you can associate everything. For now, with the current luminosity, probably it is not a big problem. So maybe this can be tried. But any attempt for the invisible channel has shown that it's overwhelmed in the background.
Purely invisible, yes. I want to apply this to semi-invisible. So if you don't like photons, imagine a pair of relatively soft photons.
Yes.
But what you say does require that there's 30 GeV of balancing transverse momentum at one of the soft interaction vertices. That's relatively...
Well, remember that since the missing ET exists also at level 1, it just goes and scans the calorimeter and puts a vector. There's no vertex information at all.
No, absolutely. But when you actually process these events and go offline,
yes,
you have a photon, and if... So the background that you're talking about has one of the soft interactions recoiling the 30 GeV, which ought to be noticeable, right?
So you're saying that the missing ET and the photon will not be consistent, but you calculate missing ET using all particles from all interactions, because you cannot disentangle the neutrals when you measure the missing ET, right?
No, I'm just arguing that there's not going to be a problem from spuriously generating a photon
from one of the quote soft events in the pileup situation.
But I'm not saying about the real problem. I'm saying about the statement for the But I mean, since it's a proton collision, the large part of the net comes from the recoil and not of the photon itself. So in principle, it could happen. In ILC, the
All right. No, that was yesterday. This is today.
So there's this scenario where X behaves for many atoms still. It should also be in this category.
Yes. Yeah. And we have some preliminary analysis in this level for this atom also. There are more different model systems to get two electrons, so it's not quite as it's more complicated to design. It's also one of the things that we're considering.
So one thing you're probably already also knowing is if I just do the model jet search plus Mac, that includes the things to what is the
direct detection rate? Oh, well, that's not model independent. Yeah, so if you take literally thermal Higgs portal dark matter, that's already basically closed at SNZ9.
So, but this will be slightly higher. I'm not talking to you about this level, but I'm just saying this will give you a measurement of
six coupling. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's interesting. And I don't know the number offhand, but I agree with that. That's an interesting feature of all of these models.
Yeah. Yes. Any questions? All right, if not, let's thank Jesse again.